You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshi on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
What you need when what you really want inside can't. You are listening to African Perspectives, where we view the issues of our day from an African worldview and African-centered perspective. This program is unapologetically African. It is a custom in the African tradition to ask elders for permission to speak, having been granted permission. To our ancestors, whose shoulders we stand on, to our elders, whose shadows we walk in, I greet you, my dear brothers and sisters. In the language of one of the greatest civilizations on this planet, it gave the world the basic disciplines of knowledge of science, math, architecture, music, writing, law, religion, you name it, we did it. The Greeks called it Egypt, but they called themselves Kemet, and Kemet means land of the blacks. I greet you all in the Kemetic language, the word of peace, Hotep. It is truly an honor and a privilege to pour libation because we truly do stand on the shoulders of those who came before us. We're going to use water because water has no enemies. Water is the great cleanser, the great purifier. Everything on the planet that lives, it needs water, from a tiny microscopic organism to a tall redwood tree. We pour water into the earth to invoke the spirits of our ancestors, and we say the word Ashe, which simply means so be it. So we pour this libation to God for all that God has done and for all that God will do. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to Mother Africa, birthplace of all humanity. Everyone who has lived, everyone who will live in the future, we all have a common ancestral root in Africa. We pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. I mentioned Kemet in the opening. Kemet was the height, the apex, the zenith of African high culture. But there were others as well, as Timari, Punt, and Nubia. So we pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa, of Ghana, Mali, Songhai, Benin, Great Zimbabwe, civilizations that were flourishing and growing while Europe was in a medieval or dark age. The University of Sankore at Timbuktu, an outstanding educational institution. So we pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the Maafa, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the Infakani, the great tragedy, uprooted out of Africa. Our brothers and sisters lay a carpet along the Atlantic Ocean. We're in North America, South America, Central America, and throughout the diaspora. So we pour this libation to our brothers and sisters who suffered the Maafa, the Infakani, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the great tragedy. We pour this libation in their honor and in their memory. We do not know their names, but because of them and their sacrifice, we are here. So we say Ashe. We pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. If you ever heard me do a libation, you will know that we were not slaves. I repeat, we were not slaves. We were captives. What does a captive want to do? Get free. So we pour this libation to all those men and women who fought against enslavement. In fact, I maintain that some of us are more of a slave today than we were in our initial captivity, because some of us are a slave to vice, to corruption, to drugs, sex, and violence. So we pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement: Gabriel Prosser, Nat Turner, Dingmark Vesey, Harriet Tubman. We always resisted, and we will always resist. So we pour this libation in the name and the honor of those men and women who fought against our captivity. We pour this libation to those unborn, those young men and women who will once again lead us back on the stage of human history as a free and proud and productive people. We sashe. We pour this libation to brotherhood and sisterhood, together for the union of family. We need each other. We don't have good family life. There's a saying, conditions shape conduct and consciousness. The conditions in our community are bad. The conduct towards each other is not good. Because why? We lack consciousness. And consciousness is more than just awareness. Consciousness is a deeper understanding of who you are historically, who you are culturally. So once we begin to understand the importance of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. Brothers and sisters, let us all say, Ashe, Ashe.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit the them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Good morning, African world. You are listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. And I am your host, Baba Oshi. Hotep family, hope you are well today. Hope you're going to have a good day today. Hope you get a chance to do all the things you want to do, should do, must do, and can do and will do. Hoping to the weather is accommodating for you to do it. But of course, if it is not and it's serious, then maybe not. But if it's not, you got to get it done. You'll get it done. Hey, I used to be a firefighter, and I know when that bell rang, whether it was 70 degrees or even 80 degrees or maybe even 90, or even was 5 below, you got to go and mitigate the situation. So sometimes it has to be done. Get it done, family. All right, this is African Perspectives. We're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., 10 to 12 Central, 9 to 11 Mountain, or 8 to 10 Pacific, any other time around the world. But if you cannot listen to this program live, family, listen up. Go to timeforanawakening.com. Top of the page, you'll see podcast programs. Click on that. The drop down, you'll see African Perspectives. Click on that, and there will be for you programs that are dated and titled. Other programming we have here on Time for an Awakening, once again, this program is every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. And all times are going to give our Eastern times. Tomorrow, Thursday, well, let me begin with the programs that we have. From Mondays and Wednesdays, from 7 p.m. to 9 p.m., Our Story with Baba Wes Johnson out of New Orleans. Our Story, Baba Wes Johnson out of New Orleans, on Mondays and Wednesdays from 7 to 9. On Thursdays, the Black Liberation Movement, Mississippi on the Move, with Brother Patrick Lumumba of the Geronimo Pratt Gun Club, on Thursdays from 8 p.m. to 10 p.m. 8 p.m. to 10 p.m. Fridays at 8 p.m., Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. Sunday, from 5 p.m. to 6 p.m., Pinckney to Pinckney. Activist and Reverend Edward Pinckney out of Benton Harbor, Michigan, from 5 p.m. to 6 p.m. Sunday evening at 7 p.m., once again, it's Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. And the number to call is 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. Yep, our guest today will be Brother Bomani Tayemba. I look forward to talking with him and some of the great things that he has done and continues to do. Man, we'll find out how many people that he has helped take a trip of a lifetime to go to the motherland, you know. And only us, you know. He ain't taking nobody else. He's taking us. So I hope you understand that. Yeah, he's taking us to a trip of a lifetime. Let me get off into the Inyasa Sim of Daily Revolutionary Thought. Baba Mali Mubaruti. January 14th. Revolutions are never compromising. Revolutions are never based on negotiations. Revolutions are never based upon any kind of tokenism whatsoever. Brother Omowale, Malik El Shabazz, Malcolm X. Some Africans believe that they can establish a separate
peaceful space within European-dominated territory. They wrongly believe that a deed, a treaty, and their timely mortgage and tax payments will ensure that Europeans will allow them to coexist in peace. They wrongly expect that Europeans will respect their earnest efforts as good, law-abiding citizens to purchase land so they can grow their own crops, develop their resources for themselves, and become more spiritually connected in peace with no possible threat of invasion. For some strange reason, they believe that Europeans has changed. Blindly holding on to hope in a non-existent morality, they forget what these people have done every time they wanted something that they did not belong to them. They forget that a land people unable to defend and keep their land is still a powerless people. Affirm, the land I claim will not be taken. Ashe. Affirm, the land I claim will not be taken. I'll say this, it ain't here. Okay? That has been proven. It ain't here. January 15th. The enemy can never be driven out by words alone, no matter how sound the argument. Westerners and or people who think like them seek to gather information, but not in a random or open fashion as they would have us believe. Instead, they methodically sift through statements for their ideas that support their beliefs. For example, they do not attend forums, debates, or lectures about political or cultural issues to have their minds changed unless they were dissatisfied with their positions beforehand. A broadened or contrary perspective is sought only when they have no other choice because they have become overpowered and have a need to pretend in inclusive multiculturalism, or because they realize that what they believe has completely failed them. But even then, they acquiesce only with the expectation that this new truth will eventually be brought in line with their unchanged agenda and be credited to them as their original thinking. Debate is never for the sake of debate, except to distract your enemies. They attend public discussions in order to have what they already believe validated by experts. They attend to receive information that fits what they already know. Affirm. I engage in thought and action which produces concrete results. Affirm. I engage in thought and action which produces concrete results. Brothers and sisters, once again, the Enya Sesim of daily revolutionary thought. I really love reading the Enya Sesim, and it always kind of guides me each day, especially on this program. I read it and it's like, wow, that's what we're talking about, or that's what we talked about or thought about and dealt with yesterday or the day before or the day after. Yeah, the Enya Sesim of daily revolutionary thought. Yeah, we're going to talk with Brother Bomani Tayemba of Africa for the Africans. And I really do appreciate Brother Bomani and all that he is about and what he has done. Where's my stuff at? There it is. Yeah, I know that. I usually don't do the announcements too much anymore. I just do them one time a week, and some of the announcements will be curtailed because they're not, I've been doing them for so long, but a lot of them, they're not in existence. It's not happening. So just like Us Lifting Us is no longer on Blog Talk Radio because there is no Blog Talk Radio. Yeah. So anyway, Brother Bomani Tayemba. Brother Bomani, good morning.
greetings, Grand Rising, Brother Oshie.
How are you doing
Happy
today?
Happy 2025.
All right.
I'm well.
Thank
ready
you.
For another wonderful season, traveling to Africa and connecting people to the African continent.
Oh, man, sure. I see you got a good lineup, too, you know, once again, you know.
Yes, absolutely. And that lineup takes you around the African continent, mm-hmm. to different countries.
Yeah. Yep. In fact, let me just state that when you look at his the flyer or the brochure that he has, Africa for the Africans, Tourists and Investments, The Journey of a Lifetime. And the first one is this month, January 30th to February 10th, going to Azania, or as they like to call it, South Africa, or as the white folks like to call it, South Africa, Azania. Then April 4th through April 14th, 2025, Kenya. May 24th to June 5th, 2025, Ghana. November 20th to December 1st, 2025, Tanzania. And then in next year, February 12th to February 23rd, Liberia. April 1st through April 13th, Kemet, or what the Greeks called Egypt. So, the experience is that you can experience a vibrant Africa with a mix of roots, culture, paradise, knife life, shopping, networking, business, and investment opportunities. The package includes certified English-speaking tour guides, round-trip flights from America to Africa, transportation and tours throughout Africa, daily breakfasts and gourmet dinners, cultural ceremonies and ancestral celebrations, hotel accommodations, double occupancy, and you can get single occupancy too, can't you?
Yes, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Business and investment networking, interest to all sites and activity. Brothers and sisters, you cannot beat AfricaForTheAfricans.org. And, of course, you can call Brother Omani at 404-931-9429. 404-931-9429. And go to the website and schedule your trip of a lifetime with Africa for the Africans. How many people have you taken in the years that you have done this now?
Yes, a good 700 to 800 people over the period of 18 years.
Wow, right on, Brother.
And then a lot of other people indirectly outside of the tours.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Now, did you take advantage of the citizenship offered by Ghana?
Yes, I couldn't make it there, so mm-hmm. we'd have to get back on the next list. But unfortunately, some of us missed out, and mm-hmm. so we're just getting prepared for the next time. It's one of those things that you have to be ready and prepared.
Sure.
Example, when I tell people if you don't have a passport and opportunities come up, you know, right. now you have to submit something that's going to take 3 to 4 months, and then by that time the opportunity is gone.
Right. So you got to
let people know they have to be ready.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. In fact, to me, you should always be ready with the things that are necessary. That's number one, a passport, because you ain't going nowhere outside of the United States without a passport. You can't even go to Canada anymore, you know. So you got to have a passport.
Yes, yeah.
So that's number one. Then number two, you know, plan the trip that you're going to take so you can pay on it and, you know, save your money.
There you go.
The amount of money that you may need.
That's why we have schedules up. That's why we have schedules ahead of time. So
sure.
individuals can process information and can say that all these things are always at the last minute.
Mm-hmm.
Like you see, the further schedule is April and February next year.
And then also, too, for that group who plan to take advantage of that trip, there's always meetings, you know, on, you know, I don't know if you have.
I have lots of WhatsApp group for each of the tours. And then we have from Facebook to emails to text message to just sending out information. And then information is consistently updated on the website. And then from, you know, the YouTube videos and videos on other social networks and pictures, it's consistent flow of information out every month.
Mm-hmm. You're so, thorough. But, you're,
you know,
thorough.
So people have to just, you know, you're share thorough. And share.
Yeah, you're thorough with
and
that.
Share many other things.
Yeah.
But go ahead.
I said you're pretty thorough with that, and you do a lot of updating, you know. So you make sure that it's, you know, people are well informed of the trips that are there and what it entails. And then, of course, even when they get back, the pictures that you post, if you want to see pictures, brothers and sisters, as you listen right now, if you want to see pictures of previous tours, go to facebook.com/Bomani. If you want to see videos of previous tours, and I've done both, it's worth it, and they're updated. It's not like this is a pictures from 2021, you know, or, you know, 2019 or something like that. So if you want to see videos, go to youtube.com/Bomani2007. Yeah.
Appreciate it, and all the documentation is there, and they're consistently being uploaded as we travel on different journeys. We just share all those updates. Like right now, we just came back from Kemet, Egypt on November 2024, and lots of pictures and videos. And also we have photos on Google Photos. So when we do newsletters for any specific tour, you know, we have those links in the newsletter. And that gives you the itinerary, the overview, all the links to the photos and videos and the different networks. So it's information being, you know, available where anyone can just take their time, click on it, look at it, and just be clear on it. Mm-hmm. And they can see all the previous journeys before, so they can get a feel of who's, you know, traveling with us and how the energy look.
Yeah, especially in some of the videos, man. That's really good. I love it. You know. Yeah. And the pictures as well, of course, but, you know, you have been pretty thorough over the years of providing this information, and more importantly, this service for our people, for those who want to go to Africa and experience it for themselves. What would you say that the number of people who have repatriated, who have, you know, after taking one of your trips and decided to go back and live?
Yeah, I can't share any direct numbers, but we do have a bunch of people living in countries like Ghana, Tanzania, South Africa, and people finding their ways to other countries. So the more we make those connections and the more we build that connection, the more people are open, because there's more things in place, more things are clear.
Right.
So it's up to us to, you know, to get to these countries and, you know, share information and, you know, give people a chance to be open. And as you can see with the flood of Ghana, it took decades of people going there and making moves, and things changed as time went along, where there's citizenship available. And so it becomes a situation where you have citizenship available in West Africa, because those are the countries that we've been going and connecting to.
Right.
I mean,
right.
There's a few countries, and altogether, Ghana has given out more citizenship than all of the countries combined in Africa. Mm. And that's because of that energy. Myself alone has been to Ghana 24 times in groups from 2006 to now. Mm-hmm. And then other people have, you know, done the same or done similar. And people have went out and invested in business. So it opens up that conversation for citizenship. But if you don't show up and sit here and request and want all African countries to do all these things, and there's no connection, there's no networking. And so some people may say, well, they should be doing this and they should be doing this. But at the end of the day, somebody has to make a move. And if we're the ones that want to see things change, then we have to make the move.
No doubt we do. We have to make that move, you know, and we have to help them, you know, the brothers and sisters on the continent, to understand that move needs to be made. You know, there's tens of millions of Africans in the diaspora, you know, as a Pan-Africanist, and a staunch Pan-Africanist, I understand the move to Africa, whether it's to any of the countries or any regions, it has to be made, because really the future for us as African people lies in the unification of Africa and Africans coming home to control resources, to control the land, you know, to build up throughout Africa. That's imperative if we are, you know, if we're going to be a people again. And, you know, when you, it irks me, brother. Let me just say this, Brother Bomani. It irks me. It just gnaws at me to that Europeans still manipulate and dominate and control in Africa in resources. You have the Germans going back into Namibia. You have the Indians going back into Uganda. You know, you have the Arabs that are there. You have the Caucasians there. You have the Chinese who are there, you know. And many of these people have done, but particularly the Chinese, I would say, have done some things positive. But yet and still, there's a disdain and hatred for Africans by these people. And there's a lot of disrespect shown to us in the, you know, in Africa, you know. And so to me, it's more important that Africans begin to go to Africa and develop a network and develop a cadre of us to say, hey, we're going to put our money here. We're going to come in and work. We're going to come and bring people. We're going to come and educate. You know, the thing about African is we can't do it like we did in Liberia. And I know Liberia is one of your trips upcoming this year.
Yes, one of the journeys of a lifetime, Liberia. The first African republic and African nation that built the momentum for other nations to rise, but in the end had its own downfall, which is being rebuilt. So you go through those struggles, just like, you know, we've seen Rwanda.
Mm-hmm. And, right.
And, you know, their struggles and then their rise. And so, you know, from slavery to colonization to neo-colonization, you go through these struggles where, you know, where you're put in a position to tear each other apart, and you have to figure it out from there on. And I feel right. like at this moment, all African countries, majority of them have been through certain struggles to where the only thing that you can look at now is the future and building that connection with the diaspora and, you know, making moves and really building true Pan-Africanism where we can have a Pan-African world.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's it. You know, wherever you are on the planet, your home base, the reason why other people do so much better is because they have a home base. And we have
Absolutely.
Been fragmented. You know, hell, this ain't our home base. Look how we're disrespected here. Look how we're marginalized here. Central America's not our home. Caribbean's not our home base. That's still run by the people who stole the land, the British, the Spanish, you know? So I'm saying is that the reality of it for us is that we need to make that connection to Africa. You don't have to make it physically, but you have to make that connection, and you got to support that for those who are there physically to do the things that are necessary. The reason why we're constantly disrespected on this around the world is because we have not made that connection. You know, we don't truly have Africa. We may claim it, but we don't truly have it because others are there. And some overtly do it and some clandestinely do it, but they dominate and control it. Let's be real, you know. And so that's why, to me, it's important that people go there to see for yourself. And you've been doing that with over 700 of our people over the years. And no Caucasians, right?
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Just a cultural connection for us as a people.
Yes. That's what it is. It's a cultural connection. It is us, you know.
It's our time to make our moves and focus on what we need to do as a people and not get distracted by what other people are doing, because other people are going to always do what they need to do, and they're proving themselves. And while they're doing that, we're scrambling, and, you know, we end up being last on all of these different lists and visions and future. Now, while we're scrambling, the Asian nations are getting their children and getting their future ready for high technology advancement and taking advantage of all technical advancement opportunities that's available, because they know that's the future and the children are ready. So when it's time for competing for jobs, careers, or innovations, or this opportunities, or entrepreneurship they're ready. And that's what we have to focus on.
See, and I think that's vitally important why we as American Africans or Africans, importantly in the diaspora, make that firm connection with Africans on the continent and begin to go there to work with Africans, to educate and so forth. You know, we have to do this. This is vitally important for us to have a future, you know? And so I know that it doesn't at times look that way. I know it looks bleak, but damn it, you know, if you get up off your ass and open your mind and have the courage to reach out, you know, make these connections, we have to do this. I can say we can't. No, we have to do this. The future for us as a people is at stake. And some of us don't realize that because some of us, just as I read Baba Baruti's Inyasa Sim, you know, of Daily Revolutionary Thought, you know, many of us think that, you know, Europeans, Caucasians are going to somehow look at what they've done to us and then treat us differently. That's not going to happen. You know, that's not going to
happen. Yeah, that's definitely a fantasy, serious.
Yeah. You know, they're going
to
continue.
I mean, look at the best examples for us to look at the Asian nations in the 1930s and African nations in the 1930s. The end result is just different methods. Both regional areas got independence, but you see who's, you know, who the colonizers
was,
are at the mercy to. They're at the mercy to the Asian nations. They need them to, you know, to handle productions and manufacturing. Mm-hmm. But, you know, Africa, you know, we have always offered our labor, whether it's freed or paid. But then what's the end result of our economy? Is it being industrialized to where we can be self-sufficient?
No.
Or is it just
our
labor that's being used to where, you know, we stay in the same situation, maintaining our own oppression?
Exactly.
Where we're just barely getting by. And so it's up to us to change what we need to change, because everyone else is going to still play the same cards and still play, you know, the way they have played. And they're not going to have any mercy in the world stage for people who are confused or caught up into situations or have an African Union where they're not really united and there's no common goals. And so, you know, developing nations and aggressive nations or nations who want to rise, they're going to take advantage of that situation. So that's why you see all different races and nations of people on the African continent taking advantage of opportunity where us as the African diaspora should and could be taking advantage of those opportunities. But no one is going to just feel sorry for us if we just end up being last on trying to figure it out. Right now, the rest of the world is looking at Africa as the final frontier, whether they're looking for their minerals or they're looking for new customers or they're looking for another place to just build their investments and domination. And so that's why, you know, we do what we do and we'll make our connections, but, you know, also other people got to get involved. And we have people here that could be part of the manufacturing and the industrialization of different parts of Africa, since there's land and opportunities. But, you know, we have to work it out. And so we have a connection going and always trying to connect with other people, especially on the grassroots, because everything else get watered down, you know, from the grassroots. And you end up not focusing on the vision and the things that you initially had plans and goals to invest in and do, and now you're sidetracked. But that's why we keep things in the grassroots, and we just always just reaching out to other people to join the energy and just make these moves. And citizenship in countries like Ghana is one thing. Now we can evolve to other things in the country.
Who else is offering citizenship? Is Tanzania offering citizenship?
Sierra Leone is offering citizenship, but that's based on you having a DNA for Sierra Leone. So I did my DNA, and it didn't come close to anything in Sierra Leone, so I'm not qualified. But as far as Ghana, traveling, living, and doing business there, people like myself is qualified. Those are the two main games as far as, or connection as far as, an African diaspora being available for citizenship on African continent. outside of that, you have to really get to a specific country and kind of live there for a while, build business, build a connection to where after several years you can apply for a citizenship, keep on renewing your residency in between after you get your visa. So that is one of the main process. A lot of us want to get things done now, and for the people who have just gotten citizenship in Ghana without having to do much of anything, invest or put their time and life and work into it, that's that's based on those of us that have done that. So it's not an open season on any other African country as far as having that connection. So for those who want to see it happen, they have to just get up and make the move and update their passport or get a passport, reach out to people like myself or just make the initial move to the countries and start from day one and just kind of work towards it. But that seems to be the main game that we can do as a people, because we can continue to be successful in the future of America and keep on doing what we're doing. And some of us have a better quality of life than others. But at the same time, too, when you're talking about building freedom, having the open opportunity to where you can have something for yourself, your family, or build something for the future of your own Black African children, then that means you have to make a move. And that move is what we're doing, and just encouraging other people to open their minds, because whether they look at America as the greatest nation that they've seen in the last several hundred years, they also have to look at the fact that we as a people have been in the same situation where we have been in, undermined, at the bottom of every social status. And then, yes, we do have people that have done well for themselves, but at the same time, too, and then, young generation of people may have a better opportunity, but at the same time, too, do we have a nation of our own? Do we have something where the fruits of our labor is going to be passed on to our generation, or passed on to a Black economy, a Black nation, passed on to our children, our people? So in a mix of this, us being here and looking at the wealth situation, and wealth is being passed on to the same set of people, whether you're working every day on a plantation and you're giving everything back, or whether you decide to be a very successful business person in the world of this entrepreneurship, sports, entertainment, and you decide to marry someone that is not in your culture.
Yep. Yes.
And then something happened to you, and next thing you know, everything that you have worked hard and earned mm-hmm. for, it's now in that culture, which we see more and more. I'm not telling people who to commit to and who to build any relationships yeah. with. But we have to also look at the vision of the future of our people. If we continue down the path of just either continuing or maintaining our own oppression by just working hard every day, we're happy to retire from corporations, but if we have given everything back to that, back to not exactly that corporation, but people own all these corporations. What are we doing? Are we evolving? Are we progressing? So that's why we bring up Africa and bring up, if we were to redistribute some of our resources and our wealth and our investment into doing certain things in Africa, building real estate, getting to the different countries, building connections, and putting things in place to where if you build a factory, if you build something, now it's a part of your family legacy. Versus, a country where majority of industries are dominated, by the same set of people who built these 13 colonies and passed on their legacy. Now they have 50 states. It's a dominant force in the entire world. And just like how they struggled and did what they had to do, that's the same thing that we as a people have to do. And they just always go back to Marcus Garvey as far as talking about Africa for the Africans, and for us to basically have the same fight, the same courage and energy as everyone else, because they're doing the same thing. They're looking out for the future of their generations. They're looking out for their legacy. Like, you have a president that's not even a president right now. Donald Trump will be inaugurated Monday. And without even being in the presidency, he has made his moves. He has set things up in place to build a future and build a, build a future for him and his people. And naturally, we as a people live in the same country, so whatever works out, we're entitled to and have access to. And then that's where we have to say, let me just use the access to whatever resources that the different governments have in place and use some of it to make some moves in Africa, some serious moves. So no one's going to feel sorry for us as a people, but we have to figure it out, and we have to do what we need to do. Because while they're building their Make America Great Again, you know, we have to figure out where that, what is in place for us, and how should we use it, and are we going to just keep on playing in the same game as far as just watching other people make their moves, and we just enjoy some of the trinkets and just enjoy whatever is just tossed us, or are we going to have a bigger picture and a bigger vision to say, you know what, maybe this is the time where we invest in Africa on a level to where we can build our own nation and have our own strength, our own home base, and take it to another level to where now we can compete with the rest of the world versus being, you know, a victim of what everybody else is doing. You know, you consistently see the different Asian nations moving in Africa. You see the Indians, the Chinese moving in Africa. You see the Lebanese, their country is going through it. So they have people all along the entire coast of West Africa. So they're in a smart situation. Their people for generations have built that connection in Africa, and they've been very quiet. They have not been a people where you say the Lebanese are troublesome outside of them just being dominant and what they need to do. But that's an example of a people who are in a certain conditions, and they have their own country, their own nation, but that nation is surrounded by this consistent chaos. And so they've already, for generations already, I'm saying to people, so what I'm telling and talking to us as a people,
so you're saying
that generations skip by us. Oh, go ahead, absolutely, brother, go ahead.
So you're saying that the Lebanese in Lebanon, because of the surroundings, is so damn chaotic, and you're right about that, especially with Israel, especially with Israel there.
They seem to be very peaceful people, I think.
But they also have a stronghold in Africa. Which country?
Oh, when I first went to Senegal in 2004, that's what I learned about the Lebanese connection to Africa.
In Senegal?
They've been there for generations. Senegal was the first, April 2000, that was March 2004. Mm-hmm. And then when I went to the Gambia, I went to Ghana. You know, it was like the same energy. They were there, and in Ghana they have an area called Osu, which is like one of their strongholds.
Yeah,
from restaurants. Like if you look at all of the 24/7 restaurants, or the restaurants is open, because Osu is like that area where it's basically 24 hours a day. You know, from the nightlife.
It's a busy area. Yes, it is. Yeah.
So this is the social energy, the people on the street. They're open, and then what you see is a whole lot of Lebanese restaurant that's just literally 24/7, and hotels, and you know they're there in the town and the community, and they're laying low to where you don't ever hear much about them other than them just doing business, but there are people who have set themselves up to where if something happened in their home country. And that's their home country, and this is not our home country, America. Now they can make a move. So what I'm telling our people is that, not saying that all of us have to evacuate and run away from America, because it's not that situation. But it's like if we're here in America and we're doing business and investments and trade, then we can connect it to business and investment trade with our own people that have repatriated and our people that have established things in Africa. So it's basically just, you know, encouraging us to build this relationship, build these moves, and use some of the money that we work hard for to spend on a plane ticket and pay for our own accommodations, because that's what you're doing. Mm-hmm. It's something that you're spending on yourself versus 20, 30 years. And, you know, you have people who have a whole lot of vacation days, but the vacation days, when they get it, they're staying home because they're not, you know, they have not worked their situation to where they're prioritized. Let me just do something for myself. They're caught up into other things.
Well, let me say this, that based upon what I just, from the flyer, your trips have always been, to me, very affordable. Very affordable, as I've seen other tour trips and announcements, especially by some of our scholars, you know, that I think they just kind of, you know, put in there a little bit more for themselves, and I understand that. But still, you know, we're trying to get brothers and sisters who have a feeling for Africa and who have a feeling to want to go to see how it is. But, you know, they ain't making six figures. You know, they're not. So these brothers and sisters, quote, ordinary brothers and sisters, if they want to make that move and make a trip of a lifetime, it's very affordable. And there are plans. There are opportunities. So you put your money down, put a small amount down, and you pay on it each month. And so by the time you've made that last payment, you got all your paperwork in order, you have everything that you need, you've already been going, listening to Brother Bomani on the broadcast, on the telephones, hookups, Facebook, if that's the case, or FaceTime, if that's the case, or whatever. Now you know, and you're ready to take that trip of a lifetime and the opportunity of a lifetime. And maybe when you go there, you feel that connection. You feel that connection, and you want to come back again and then do something there and establish that relationship and hopefully maybe repatriate. That means to go back and live, you know, and make that foundation. You know, I know that that is on my agenda for me to do. Because I don't want to be here forever, man. I sure in the hell don't want to be buried here. You know, if I should expire for whatever reason, the instructions to my daughters is that, hey, you know, cremate my ashes and send me over to the motherland and sprinkle me. You know, even if y'all don't go find out, call Brother Bomani Tayemba. Brother Bomani, when you going back to Africa, where you going? Here's my father's ashes.
Yeah, absolutely, brother. I'm with you on that.
You know, and sprinkle them when you get to whatever, because he don't want to be buried here. I'm serious. I'm damn dead serious. You know? And so for me, the quest to go home, and more importantly, to promote it, and then hopefully begin to see it, to begin to see Africa reemerge. That's why, what do you think about the Sahel, the brothers in Burkina Faso, Mali, and Niger?
Yeah, personally, I think it's a great move for any country in West Africa to open up a connection to the African diaspora. Based on the situation in Ghana, it's proven that it is a great opportunity, and they just have to put more things in place to make it work. So that's a good start, and people are looking for the tangibles as far as this, you know, when you go there, things really being in place. So I've never been to Burkina Faso. I don't know anyone that's physically have traveled there. Outside of just, you know, in and out a few days or just being close to the northern region. But looking forward to seeing, you know, mainly the tangibles, because a lot of governments talk big about connecting with the diaspora, then you don't see much of anything. So always looking forward to the best, and looking forward to this, seeing more things come from that side, because now they're in competition with other countries, because other countries have stepped it up. So one more countries now need to do a lot more and put more in place. And now, for those who are really serious, you know, more of us will come, because we have shown that we as a people will show up, and that's what we have done over the last few decades in Africa. Mm-hmm. So now more of the pressure is on African states in West Africa to, you know, produce, and we're all looking forward to it. And that will give leverage to making other countries step their game up.
Right.
Now they'll realize that they're not the only country in town.
And hopefully many of them begin to promote and find ways to attract brothers and sisters here in the diaspora, not just here in America, but throughout, you know, because, you know, we have a lot of brothers and sisters in Brazil. There's many other countries in the Caribbean and so forth. And of course, their living conditions are not what they could and should be. And hopefully that they would want to make that trip and then put themselves in a country of, you know, Senegal and so forth, and mesh. That means get along. That means melt with the brothers and sisters there. Because like I said, you know, you're going to Liberia, and I still think about how we went to Liberia when they talked about some freedom for us, and to go to Liberia after our enslavement, and many of us went to Liberia with an attitude that we were better than the Liberians because we had been in America, you know, or our skin is not as dark. And then the brothers and sisters in Liberia thought, well, we're better than y'all because we've never been, you know, we had never been enslaved, we've been colonized, you know. And so that kind of mindset is still with us today. Isn't that correct in Liberia to some degree?
That's unfortunate. Yes, we as the people still have that mindset, and mm-hmm. it's just things that we have to work through.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah. Well, I'm gonna
because at the end of the day, you know, the colonizers and the investors of Africa will use it against us as a people.
Sure.
And that's how
divide and conquer.
Just get away with this.
Yes.
Taking
yes.
over and owning everything, and then we as a people are just subjugated as just basically modern day slaves, just mm-hmm. Working for a corporation and giving everything back to them, underpaid, I should say, also.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I think there has to come a point for us as Africans that the reality of it is not because you're Nigerian, Cameroonian, Ghanaian, Tanzanian, you know, Zenia, whatever you are on the continent, or wherever you are on this planet, the fact that we need functional unity, we need to develop a one Africa, an Africa that is not run by despots, is not run by individuals, is the type of government is representative government, is not this so-called bullshit about democracy. They ain't have it here. We need a representative kind of government, and that those who are not us, if they want to stay, they will be heavily taxed. If not, you got to go. You got to go. Because you know, we can't, what people have done to us, we couldn't even possibly get away with doing in their countries. We couldn't even entertain the damn thought about doing what they have done to us on the continent of Africa. And showing
absolutely, and the perfect example of that, Oshie, is look at all of the business and investment different Asian nations are doing in Africa.
Right.
Now, when we as a people tried to, and when I mean we as a people, I'm talking about the Africans on the continent, try to actually just make a move or go to any of those countries, you can barely even get visas or barely even get access to get to the country to do anything. So they have a dominance of being able to come into your country, invest, do business, basically dominate, and then you don't have no playground in their country or no access. You know. So, and it's the same thing with the Africans that's in Europe. In America,
yes,
they're basically just modern day workers. I'm not saying that none of them are successful or anything, but it's, you know, it's a game where if you just keep on playing the same game and keep on following everyone else's rules, you'll never get to advance. You're always just being in that situation, just players in the game that you're playing hard or running fast or doing whatever you're doing,
mm-hmm.
but you're never winning because everybody else have control of that game and they have it all rigged.
Yes, it's their game. We got to have our own game. And that's been
exactly.
our problem.
So that's the solution. You have to have your own game.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of like you trying to compete in the majors or these, and then you realize that, well, you have all of the players, you have all of the talent,
mm-hmm.
you have all of the other resources, and they may have bankroll bigger than you, but if you put your cooperative economics together, as Amos Olson beautifully explained in his book, The Blueprint for Black Power, which is strategically lay out how we as a people can come from just playing in someone else's game to basically building our own game. But then the things that we have to do is the things that we have to do, and we have to be willing to do them. And if we're not willing to do them, then we just have to keep on doing the same thing, playing in someone else's game. But that's why we talk about that nation of our own mm-hmm. and working with our own brothers and sisters on African continent to build that nation. And, you know, going through the struggles that we have gone through as a people and going through where, you know, at the end of the day, you have to pay to play. You can't sit around in a chair and your computer and be on live streams and talk about all the things going on in Africa. Like, I've seen people like this do these things religiously when they come on live streams that we have, and It's just sad because, and like I tell him, I was like, you can talk all the great, wonderful things you want to talk and talk about how we as a people didn't give up our citizenship and we're stolen. But it's like you still have to make a move to that continent and that country that you want things to change in and be someone level of an effect. Other than that, the people that you're going to run into, that you're going to talk to on the continent, they're going to talk about their own struggles. And they're going to tell you the same thing too, that you have to be able to just come and make a move. But you being there complaining and talking about what's going on in Africa is just a useless conversation.
It's a useless conversation. You just
And if we
jawed
didn't
at
do
me.
that, we did that in Ghana, people couldn't be celebrating and talk about their citizenship in Africa, which is a beautiful thing, because who would ever think that we're the people that have been stolen can return to the continent that we're stolen from and build relationships and now become a citizen? That's something that the people who put us in that situation and made the moves to transport us and put us in their working capital probably never thought about it. And our people that saw us gone or never thought that we would return. But that's what I tell people, and that's a new day. We as a people are returning,
That's right.
and now we have to just come together and then really just put together game plans on what we want to do. And one or
See,
two countries have opened up, so even though all the countries haven't opened up, we just work with the countries that we have access to,
right,
that
and
we
build
build
from
those
there.
relationships and make it happen.
Right, build from there. That's what we have to do.
And build from there, exactly. So I tell people, at least you have a starting point now
That's
for those
right.
who have been sitting back on their armchair and talking about Africa for decades and never made a move. And it's a bunch of them out there. They call them poor mother and they poor righteous teachers. At one point that was not a bad thing, but now it's like in a world of economy and nation building and moves, you can't come with that energy anymore. Because we live in a working society and most people are working. So, whether you're making 40,000 or 400,000, you have to work those things out. And just because you make less than other people don't mean that you can't manage yourself to do more than other people. Some people just literally tie themselves up into this, giving everything back to the system while somebody make and half of what they make and able to do a whole lot more. So we also have to discipline ourselves and know what we're fighting for and what we're competing for.
That's right. All right, Brother Bamani, you hold those thoughts, man. We're going to be coming right back. We're going to take a break. When we come back from the break,
Absolutely.
there'll be more conversation with Brother Bamani Tayemba. Africa for the Africans. He's taken over 700 of our people over to the continent on trips of a lifetime. Some have chosen to stay or go back to stay. Some have chosen to invest. Some just take it as a tourist, which, of course, I never wanted to be a tourist in a country that really is our birthplace, you know. But hey, whatever it is, make the connection. Make the connection. Contact Brother Bamani Tayemba at africanfortheafricans.org. He has many trips upcoming. We'll talk about that when we come back from the break. Brothers and sisters, listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. Today is January 15th, the birth date of the Honorable Martin Luther King. He was born on this date here in Atlanta, Georgia. He was assassinated April 4th, 1968. And those of us who are old enough can, just like everything else, you remember some of these incidents, where you were at and what happened and so forth, like when Kennedy was shot, when Martin Luther King was assassinated, Malcolm X. I remember all of those things in somewhat detail, But Dr. King has a great history. He was assassinated at the Lorraine Motel in Memphis, Tennessee. And there's a lot of controversy surrounding that situation. A lot of controversy. You have supposedly some people who were in his inner circle were supposed to be his sergeants, Some who believe that betrayed him. He was married to Claretta Scott King from 53 to the time that he was assassinated. And they had four children. MLK III, and Yolanda King, Dexter King, and Bernice. MLK III and Bernice King are the only two that are living. Yolanda King, she died of a heart attack, and Dexter died of cancer. And the other grandkids that they have. Yeah. Dr. King's father, who named himself, you know, Dr. King's initial name was not Martin Luther King. You know, it was Michael. His name was Michael. And his father changed their name to the reformer, Martin Luther. The German reformer started the Lutheran Church. So he named himself Martin Luther King, and of course, Michael King named him Martin Luther King Jr. And of course, there's Martin Luther King III. And you've probably seen his daughter. She has had some beautiful poems and so forth. Outstanding. I know you probably have a good quote because Dr. King was very quotable. He was outstanding. My favorite quote for Dr. King is, "There's nothing more dangerous than sincere ignorance and conscientious stupidity." I think that quote is so deep. Nothing more dangerous than sincere ignorance. You know what it means to be sincere, dedicated, sincerity. To ignorance? Now, understand something, brothers and sisters. Ignorance is just absence of knowledge. And so if you're not aware, not knowing, that's just. But if the information is there, there you go. That satisfies your ignorance. You now know. But conscientious stupidity, to be aware that your ass is stupid and will continue to be. There are many of our people who are afraid to listen to this program, listen to brothers and sisters like ourselves who advocate independence, self-determination, liberation, and sovereignty for African people. They don't want to know. There's a saying, you know, that they don't want to know, because by knowing, that means they have to. They have to change their behavior. They have to do something different, because now you've been made aware. So they'd rather stay blind. They'd rather stay silent. They'd rather stay dumb. So, family, we're going to play a piece that Dr. King, a little bit bio piece. And once again, pay tribute. We always do here on this program. Pay a tribute to some of the greats of our people on their birthdays or days that they died or something like that. The respect that we should have for them. Brothers and sisters, this little bio piece of the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.
I have a dream that one day, yes, this nation will rise up, live out the true meaning of its creed. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal.
Martin Luther King Jr. was born on January 15th, 1929, and graduated as the valedictorian of Crozier Theological Seminary in 1951. King became pastor of a Baptist church in Montgomery, Alabama, and later completed his PhD.
Martin Luther King was a religious man. He was a pastor and looked at racism and all of the so-called separate but equal laws and the terrible treatment of people of color in the United States. And he said, this is absolutely wrong. This is against God's will. This is not recognizing the dignity of peoples. And he made us all face that in very powerful ways.
On the eve of Rosa Parks' refusal to move to the back of a city bus in 1955, King was chosen to lead a citywide bus boycott. 2 years later, King and a group of civil rights activists formed the Southern Christian Leadership Conference to conduct nonviolent protests for civil rights.
When Martin Luther King led the Alabama boycott, that was a major turning point in the fight for civil rights. What you saw was people who had been fractionized coming together as one, walking together with others joining the fight. This was when people, America, the world, stood up and said, whoa, what are we looking at here? An amazing time.
Inspired by Gandhi's activism, King worked with the SCLC to organize black voters and civil rights protests. In 1963, King was arrested at a march in Alabama. During his prison time, King wrote a rebuttal to an article denouncing his methods. His longhand notes on the margins of the newspaper became known as Letter from Birmingham Jail and was famously republished and studied in colleges across the country.
Martin Luther King was a man of God who believed that that calling necessitated social change in the present, and he put his life on the line for that calling.
Free at last! Free at last! Thank God Almighty! We are free at last!
On August 28, 1963, King led more than 20,000 people in a massive demonstration at the Lincoln Memorial, where his speech, I Have a Dream, became a defining moment in civil rights history. Through his work, King helped pass the Civil Rights Act of 1964 and received the Nobel Peace Prize that same year.
Martin Luther King, according to Time in 1963, personified the civil rights movement. He took on one of the greatest challenges of his time and was one of the people that most influenced this very transformative time in American history.
Although King faced criticism from more militant black leaders, he continued his peaceful efforts toward both racial and economic justice. After delivering his I've Been to the Mountaintop speech at a rally in Memphis, King was assassinated the next day on April 4th, 1968, while standing at the balcony of his motel room.
King's assassination was, I think, devastating for many people. But there is also a rising level of organization, and many people, King's assassination galvanizes them into many kind of black power movements across the country, many anti-poverty movements. So it's both a moment of despair, but also a moment of political flowering.
Posthumously, King was awarded the Presidential Medal of Freedom in 1977 and a Congressional Gold Medal in 2004. Today, the Martin Luther King Jr. National Holiday continues to be honored on the third Monday of every January.
Dr. King. So, next week, Monday, on the day that that Trump gets inaugurated. Isn't that ironic? Isn't that ironic? You have the most racist son of a bitch being inaugurated once again as the President of the United States on Dr. King's birthday. Man, that is deeply ironic. You know, but then again, what it should say to us is that it is what it is. And that's who they are. That's who they are. And so I think just as Dr. King turned to Harry Belafonte and said, you know, I believe I'm trying to integrate my people into a burning building. Yeah. Yeah. And maybe had King lived, he would have embraced. Although Malcolm died many years before him. Malcolm died in 65. He died in 68. But there were others. And maybe he would have been a voice for that kind of change. Who knows? You know, although the organization, the SCLC, you know, NAACP, Urban League still tried to use the methods that they had used even today, and it's still not effective. We're still in the same situation that we've been in. Go back to Brother Monty Tayemba in Africa for the Africans. Brother Bomani.
Yes, Oshie, you're just talking about on Dr. King's birthday, new government. And this is, you know, these are all the times, you know, it's like only so many times you're going to get wake-up calls, or you're going to get reminders.
Sure. That's right.
That we need to do what we need to do as a people. You know, you're going to have different phases of different faces, different energy in government. But at the same time, too, you know, we as a people have to figure out what we're going to do. Because whether you put the blackest black person in there or the whitest white person in there, it's always going to be a situation for us as a people. That's because right. Establishment and the empire is built as what it was built for. Yeah?
And
you to showcase their power and their dominance around the world and to this push their agenda. But then, you know, how can we push our agenda if we just literally just chasing behind a set of people because of hopes that they're going to turn things around for us as a people where regardless of the situation is their focus has to be on their focus because that's why they built 13 colonies, to 50 something states and, you know, and competing against the world as the world great power. So that's, you know, that's their agenda, what they have to do. But it's like, what are we looking to do? Are we going to keep on having great leaders assassinated and go through the motions of giving their life and sacrificing their family and everything that they have just for us to keep, you know, fumbling or not, you know,
see,
you know, not passing on to, you know, to where we are, you know, evolving.
Mm-hmm. And see, that's to me why we have to develop a cadre of leadership. We have to embrace the Pan-African Federalist Movement. That movement calls for Africa to be one, one African state. That calls for the vision of Kwame Nkrumah. Calls for the vision
yes.
of Patrice Lumumba, Thomas Sankara, all the other great Africans who understood that it is not your tribal organization, but it's who you are as an African. That's first. There's no disrespect if, you know, if you say, I am, okay, I am Igbo, I'm Nigerian, I'm Ghana, I'm Ghanaian. That, yeah, but you are African first. And we had that kind of unification. We could control our resources. We could control our land. We would be players in the world instead of the pawns. We have great minds. We have tremendous ability. You know, more than anybody else on the planet. Actually, it's all right there for us. The only thing that we don't have is our right minds. That's by design. That's by design why they continue to manipulate us, continue to undermine us. I don't know, Brother Bomani, if you ever heard of this Caucasian name, Howard Nichols. You can go onto YouTube.
Howard Nichols, no, not off the top of my head.
Yeah, you can go onto YouTube and you put in Howard Nichols and you listen to what he's saying to a group of Caucasians, that we have to keep Africa poor. Because we need their resources.
So I've seen that clip.
You've seen that clip, yes.
Which makes sense for them from their standpoint. If you're a white European power that have gone from Romans to the French, Spanish, British, not exactly in that direct order, and you have seen a world of European dominance, and now you know you look in this world now and. You've seen the rise of this black nation and the rise of this black ambition and self-determination. So that threatens your, you know, your world that you have built. That, you know, black people are always going to be feel like they need to be subjugated and look
exactly.
forward to other people for leadership.
Exactly.
And now we have determined that we want to build our own evolution of our world for our children, and make sure that we put things in place and restore our ancestors' glory. So they're going to have to push that agenda. And wake the rest of them up who, you know, they feel like have fallen asleep on the agenda of white dominance and white supremacy. So because, you know, we're more of an effective challenge now than probably before.
Mm-hmm.
Not saying that all of our people are waking up to where they're ready to compete. But it's enough that's going on, especially I think the biggest issue that they're seeing now is that the rise of the Asian nations. You know, you have nations like China and India are competing with them for world power, competing with them for manufacturing investments in Africa and investments in the countries that they have colonized. and countries that they have just left to this fend for their own. And so now that I've stirred them up now to where they, you know. And another thing too is like when we think about historically World War One and World War Two literally put the pressure on the French and the British. And the French and the British, who are they? They're people that had more colonies than anyone else combined in the world at that time. And so when someone like a Hitler come through with Germany and he's trying to dominate Europe, that's put a fold to them. So that's one of the other things that you're telling people, is like how many breaks that we're gonna get. Hitler gave us a break to where, where he's fighting and competing against the wickedest nations ever, and they've never seen any other power rise against them, because everything else was, not saying it was easy victory for them, but they had all the military technology, so you can just run into other nations and just take their people and go into another nation, wipe their people out, and build a fresh colony for yourself, as in the instance of the 13 colonies. So that was one break, and we keep on getting breaks over a period of time, even the wake-up call with the next inauguration, to where you as a black man can go through the same thing as this white man and still become a president. So it's like, I think a lot of times we're competing for the wrong things and not looking at let's look at the breaks that we're getting and then try to figure it out as a people to make moves somewhere else. And even the most successful black people may not think about Africa now, but the more of us go and set up the establishments that need to be set up in the relationships, I know more of them will be open, because they're in the same situation no matter how much money they're making or no matter how big their deal is. They're one situation away from the same people who have made them rich is going to now make them poor and embarrass them. Well, and I don't want to call any specific names in our recording, but we've seen a lot of things turn, a lot of the tide change for many people who thought they were on top of the world, and now whether they're in a cell or whether they're subjugated, whether they have lost all their brand deals and things like that. And so
it's
another wake-up call.
Right.
And then those are the same set of people that could be invested in what we're doing without anybody knowing. No one is going to know if you sent money in Africa for the Africans, a few million dollars to build, to build a town in Africa where it's more based on Pan-Africanism, where more of us can come from different places and establish ourselves, give our talents, our skills, and put our energy into what we feel that could basically give us an evolution to where now we can compete and rise as a people.
You know, what's interesting, though, Bomani, we have the youngest population on the planet. There's no other cultural group on the planet whose population is young as ours. And even though they have tried to eliminate us, they have tried to poison us, subjugate us, enslave us, we're still here. And we can rise, especially if the youngest population on the planet can get it together to say we speak as one. We're not a continent with 54 so-called sovereign nations, because we know that's bullshit. No, we're going to be one Africa. We're going to speak as one. We're going to unify. We're not going to let them manipulate us and cause us to fight against one another. No, we see the Europeans, we see the Chinese, we see all of those who are against us, who undermine us, who take our resources, and who make us work sometimes for pittance or nothing. That's once again enslavement. So we see what has happened. We know the history. And so therefore, that is not our future. We're gonna open our hearts and open our minds and come together, pull our resources, and do for ourselves. And if you're on the continent and you've been there, if you understand that's what we're going to do, and you want to be part of it, then fine. But if not, your ass has got to go. Go back to Spain. Go back to Italy. Go back to Belgium. Go back to China.
Right.
Go back. Go back to India. A movie. There's a number of movies that you could check out to see what has happened. in terms of colonization, but one of them is Mississippi Masala with Denzel Washington, where it talks to this Indian guy who lives in Mississippi. Of course, the Indians around the country, particularly in the South, they have liquor stores and they have hotels, you know. And, of course, they're very racist because they believe in that caste system. They believe the lighter you are, the better you are. So this Indian who owns a liquor store, his daughter's kind of dark. And so Denzel Washington and her develop a relationship, you know. He doesn't like it because he don't like black people. Yes, I'm here in this community, and I make my money out of here. And I make my money out of here so I can live in a suburb or live outside. That's happened all over. I'm in Baltimore, Maryland, a city I love, in Baltimore, Maryland. And there's a shopping mall, a little strip mall, rather. Strip mall. Every business in there is owned by Koreans. There's a big There's a big soul food restaurant.
And this is a primarily black area.
It's right smack dab in the middle of Baltimore.
Wow.
In that hood. Right there. And every bit, the liquor store, the laundromat, the supermarket, all of it. The restaurant, they do soul food because that's who the neighborhood is. And you go there and you buy it, and you buy it by the pound. So if I order something, I say, well, give me a little bit more. And so at the end of it, they weigh the food, and that's how much you pay. But I'm saying that's how it is. That's the situation that we're confronted with. And here in America, now, yeah, granted, we could come together and we say we're not buying from anybody in this community but us. We could do that. But, of course, there would be some political challenges, some legal challenges to doing that, you know. But the bottom line is that's what we must do.
That's a part of being disciplined.
Yes.
I mean, and you have to have a certain percentage of people buy into that movement that you're doing. And if everyone is not disciplined, then that movement doesn't progress.
That's right.
And that's what we're seeing with our movement. It's like you have a certain percentage of us that's into it and dedicated to it, but then the majority of us, like, you know, why bother? This is not going to get anywhere. It's the same thing that we tried to do and things like that. And I'm not upset with them for being discouraged, because it's a point where people are tired of hearing all these big talks, and there's another person that's out there always making big talks about the prince of Pan-Africanism, or they're the king of the black conscious movement, or whatever they want to claim themselves. And it just becomes that situation where you lose people, because now it's some egotistic game instead of really about the things that you talk about and the things that you have declared. Like, sometimes if we look at people and what they said 10 years ago and what we see them about, you know, it's a whole different situation. You know, whether in the world of Pan-Africanism or black consciousness, or maybe if they're just a black entertainer or someone in the world of sports and entertainment, I should say, and they have went from nothing to something, and they claim that they were going to do this and things like that, and next thing you know, other people get a hold of them, and they just lose their soul. And it seemed to be that situation. And that's why I'm a person that's always dedicated to what we're doing in the grassroots. It's the realest thing that we can do as a people, because everyone who seems to just step outside of that world are focusing on the grassroots. They end up just losing their soul, and next thing you know, they're doing the things that they claim that they are against and the things that they're not for. And then next thing you know, you see the things that they talk about or envision or got access to resources, it never get done.
Right. It still doesn't happen.
It's hard to take a lot of us serious, but at the same time, to those of us that claim that we're serious, we have to prove to our rest of our people that this is the move, this is the vision of Pan-Africanism, that we have to get ourselves involved in and transform our daily life into where it's more practical versus more of this egotism and talking and presenting and being on YouTube live every day and just talking the good talk. You know, or, you know, it's kind of like going to the church and preaching a good gospel, but then you're nothing like the things that you're preaching, you're out there doing this, nothing but sinning.
That's right.
Just telling people that we have to, you know, walk the walk and talk the talk. We're going to talk the talk. We have to also walk the walk.
I say. Well, we got some callers. Let me get some callers in on here.
Sure, excellent.
You can, of course, hit start, and then you can get in on the conversation. Brother Irv, how you doing?
Brother Oshie, how are you?
I'm doing fine. Hey, man, you still safe over there in L.A.?
Oh, yeah, I'm good. I'm good. I'm out of harm's way. You don't have to worry about it. I'm a retired fireman. Fire scared of me. They heard about me. Anyway.
What's up, brother? I like that energy. Fire scared of you. That's the energy.
Brother Bomani, it's good to hear your voice. I'm glad you're still on this side kicking and still doing your thing. You know, you do what you do, that. And you do it well. I mean, you don't do something for a long time if it's not working. Let's be perfectly clear. You've been doing this for a minute. So apparently something is working. And which I believe what you're doing is you're decolonizing the mind. And that's what myself and Brother Oshie are doing a little bit at a time, one person at a time, one day at a time. Because what happens is, you said it, you can say whatever you want to say, but if your mind is still colonized, if you're still living with the colonizer, you're still trying to marry the colonizer, if you're still trying to eat and live on the colonizer's block, and then you act as if you don't see the colonizer. I saw you do something, Bomani. You may not remember it, but you did something that stuck in my mind. I don't know if anybody else in that room felt what I felt, but we were in a museum in Senegal, and there was a bust of Mahatma Gandhi, and you lost your mind. I thought we was going to jail. Why is he in here? What is this? No, take this out of here. Because, see, you know the history of Mahatma Gandhi. You know what Gandhi said and has been documented about people, melanated people. And I got that. And I peeped it because you went off, man. I said, buddy, you need to go sit down, man, get you some rum punch or something, man.
These are live videos, man. We show them as they are, man. We don't cut nothing. We just show them how they are.
You went off, brother. You went, and it touched, and see, things like that stick in your mind. And we saw a lot of things, but things like that stuck in my mind because that was passionate. That was something that came from the inside out, not the outside in. I give a damn about how you look or what you wear and how good you speak English. That doesn't matter to me. You did something from your heart, and you meant that. This should not be in here. This should not be sitting beside Yasser Arafat. This should not be sitting beside these other great men. And I really saw that, man. But
well, you know, let me say this. Let me say this because I just did a thing on Dr. King because today is his birthday. In the King Center here in Atlanta, there still is a statue of Mahatma Gandhi. Now, of course, when you hear about Dr. King,
so it's everywhere.
When you hear
Africa, it's in Ghana, it's everywhere.
Right.
Wow, these people really promote their culture.
But see, the thing is this, Mahatma Gandhi, particularly living in South Africa, you know, fell into the ways of the South Africans, the Caucasians, the Afrikaners, you know, with that particular mindset. You know, he had no feeling for us and our plight and our struggle, you know.
That's right.
And because, number one, they're Indians. Unfortunately, the Indians believe the lighter you are, the better you are. The darker you are, you're an untouchable. You know, you're less than mentally and less than as a human. You know, and that's the mindset. And so, to me, you know, you kick Gandhi's ass to the curb. You get rid of Gandhi, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. You know, because he didn't give a damn about African people. I appreciate him advocating on behalf of Indian people because he recognized in the nonviolent movement, which Dr. King wanted to parody, is the fact that he's up against an entity, Britain, that has weaponry. Yes, the Indians can fire, outnumber them, but by the same token, you know, his nonviolent social change movement, is the only way to, because they could not defeat the British. They had no weapons. So they appealed to them in that particular way. So, yeah.
And Baba Oshie, and that's the difference in the new revolution and the new Pan-Africanism that is spreading all over Africa right now. Burkina Faso said, don't bring me no aid. Bring me some weapons. And if you're going to get your freedom, if you're going to have the level playing field, you must have a way to protect it.
not only protect your women, your children, your land, your resources. And that's what's happening in Burkina Faso. We were in Senegal, and they had just had a dictator leader. And one guy, I was talking to some people there, and this guy said, I like the dictator. I thought the dictator did more than the so-called democratic. And what I didn't understand was it's not who you are, it's who you're representing. If you're representing Erugu, if you're representing the people that are enslaving you and they're your friends, then that's how you're going to act. So when I got there, I spoke to the local people and I understood that these people speak English, but they also speak French. Why are you speaking French in an African country? Because you've been colonized. So I just want to say it's good to hear your voice, brother. Thank you for letting me speak, Baba Oshie. And King, Brother King, for me, Martin Luther King was a hated man when he died. They wouldn't even let him preach in most of the churches, black churches in the United States, mm-hmm. before he died.
Right.
The integrationists here are rampant. It's so many people who believe that if we just love them enough, as King used to say before he died, if I just love them enough, they will love me back. And if I just stay here and let them beat me and put dogs on me, we will overcome. And what happened was you got your head busted and you lost a lot. We paid a hell of a price in lives for how we live right here in this country. And now Burkina Faso, the three kings, I call them, Chad, Burkina Faso, Mali, I am so that lifts my spirit. That puts gas in my tank when I
Me
see
too,
brothers
brother.
Standing up to this imperialism and to these crackers. I call them crackers, so there you go. Yeah. But I love it, man, and I love hearing your voice. And, Baba Oshie, thank you for letting me speak. It's
right
on. Awesome.
See All right, dear brother.
Yes, sir. Peace.
Yeah, appreciate you, brother. We got to keep the energy going, and that's it, man. It's a nonstop, continuous fight and continuous dedication to making a move that we know needs to be made, that many people just won't have the heart to fight, but we have to lead them.
All right. Got another caller. Let me see. Mama Nabantu, are you there?
Yeah, multitasking. I'm here. How's everybody?
As you often
right,
do.
Mama Nabantu, appreciate you. That's always a great support of what we have done, from technology services to Africa Tours. Appreciate your energy. How you been?
I've been good. I've been sending folks to you. I don't know if they contacted you or not.
You know, some people are usually in the mix of things, but the good thing of it is they have the information to where they'll process and they'll reach out eventually, because, you know, we made the best deals and have the best program to get people connected.
Right. That's for sure. You do. So I appreciate you coming on and reminding us you're still doing what you're doing, and it's making a lot of folks very more educated in understanding more about, Africa's the place that they need to be. If you haven't never experienced it, you've got to do it at least once in your lifetime. That's really good. The folks that we were talking about earlier, I lost the name of it, that ethnic group that's there, and have the businesses there. You mentioned it a few
minutes Lebanese, ago. You're talking about the Lebanese?
Yeah, the Lebanese been there. Well, mm-hmm. My first trip to Africa.
Generations, right?
My first trip to Africa was 1969, and the Lebanese were there then. Mm. And
exactly.
I didn't understand why they were there and how prominent they were in the marketplace, And so they're still there. Quietly, they keep on with their businesses there, and the Africans there, they just, I guess, accept it, I don't know.
Exactly, because they're peaceful, and they have an agenda, but they're not disturbing the peace in the country. They're creating opportunities. So that's one of their techniques to move in, but it ended up being this white European dominance, this dominance from foreigners. But at the same time, too, they're taking advantage of opportunities that if we as a people organize properly, we can be doing a lot of the things that they're doing. Because, we're better cooks, chefs, and have better restaurants than black folks. That's one of the things they handle. And then hospitality as far as hotels, that's another thing that they have taken over, where we as a people can do the same, put our money together and dominate these industries, because most of the customers are going to be black African people.
They are going to be.
And we have to just encourage them to support and invest in more black-owned business. And these are things that we know where we have to just be competitive. But Mama Nabantu didn't mean to cut you. Just wanted to emphasize and add it in.
All right. All right, Mama Nabantu. Let me catch another caller because we're running up on time.
Go ahead.
Good afternoon.
Greetings to you, my brother.
How you doing, dear brother? How you been?
I've been well. I've been good.
All right. Rich.
I listen more than I talk.
Well,
that helps me to learn a lot.
Right on. I feel you out there, though, and I appreciate that, man, because you've been listening for years. And more importantly, you've been contributing it as well. So go ahead, my brother.
Well, I do what I can. But, you know, I've got an unusual perspective on things as it relates to us. You know, when I say us, I mean we conscious black people. Mm-hmm. And that's part of the problem is because a lot of the people, OC, that we interact with, as much as we may love and have affection for them, they're not conscious yet. And we have to deal with that. It's like having a child that sits at the table and all the other children that sit there do things in a civilized way, but you got one that just don't do right. And that's kind of how we are. Mm-hmm. And I say that from observation. You know, we interact and inject ourselves into other people's problems. And we spend that energy would be much better spent if we focus solely on our own problems. It's like your dad goes out and works, you know, and doesn't take care of one child, you know, and there's one child. He, like I said, he's the odd one. We're the odd one. We interact with
brother Richard. You brother Rick, you're having a problem. I think it's
And evolution.
Okay.
If he would just do that.
Okay.
And people like Elijah Muhammad and Noble Drew Ali and Marcus Garvey tried to point us in a direction. And we have adopted this African, I don't even know what it is. It's a very unusual thing. But we don't focus on our own progress. We forget that things take a step at a time. We don't just go from slave to free because we say we are. We have to practice the free attitude. And we don't do that, man. I mean, I don't see where we do that. Other people may agree or disagree with me in that. But we're in a worse situation than we were in the late 1800s. We really are. At least there were communities of black people who interacted with them, other communities of black people. We don't do that nowadays. I don't even know how to describe it. I don't think there is a word that's been invented that describes it other than we just don't focus on what is important.
Well, the problem has been, you know, 50, 60 years ago when we were striving to have ourselves injected into this country through integration and integrating schools, neighborhoods, and occupations and so forth, we were given some crumbs through affirmative action, only lasted just like Reconstruction after our captivity. Reconstruction lasted about 10 years. And then right after Reconstruction, you had serious racism and Jim Crowism and all that kind of stuff. You know, we were barred from you know doing whatever. And then, of course, the same thing with affirmative action. After about 10 years or so, they stripped that away and they put all those challenges there. So all the public works jobs, even that we were able to obtain, those numbers started to decrease. Like today, in the fire service, I can speak about the fire service. I know something a little bit about the fire service. The numbers in the fire service.
Yes, you're a certified fireman. Yeah, absolutely.
That's right. But the numbers
give us a breakdown.
Yeah, but the numbers in the fire service have consistently gone down over the years because of the end of affirmative action. No more than the municipalities have to include, have to hire, you know, people of color and even women, you know. So those occupations are starting to revert back to what they were in the 50s and prior, 60s and prior, you see. Mm-hmm. And so the thing is this, if you don't advocate strongly on a consistent basis and basically do be strong in that position, you know, they'll kick your ass to the curb and go back to what they've done previously. They have no problem with it, you know.
Which demonstrates what their real intent is. You're yes. absolutely right in that.
Yes.
And that's what I'm saying. Step number one, or I'll say, and one of the first steps we should make is just stop paying taxes. We have paid enough. Our forefathers have paid. We built this country. It wouldn't be nothing but a farce of coyotes if it were not for African people who were brought here and held in bondage for 400 years. 400 years, oh, see, that's yeah. that time that we could have spent building our own. Well, we seem to be expecting white folks to suddenly do right by us.
Right.
Well, why? We have no indication of them ever. What you just described. They give us little programs, or they're actually pogroms. They're not even programs to just dissuade us from the kinds of things that we need to do in order for them to just leave us the hell alone.
Yeah,
I remember my grandfather told me one time. He said, "You know what? The best thing white folks could do would be just leave us alone. We'd be fine."
Yeah.
Every time you look in history and see where a group of black people decided to do things for themselves without the interaction of white people, they progressed. We go with all this integration and civil rights and all that shit. That means nothing, because these folks, they sit up there and they decide what is a civil right.
Sure, sure.
They do it. And if we don't, I hit my 70s now. And I don't want my grandchildren to have to go through the crap that we've gone through. I would rather they leave. Go someplace yeah. else. Go to Canada. Go down in the Caribbean. Just leave these people and let them disintegrate.
Yeah.
And come back and take the resources yeah. that are left. That I think that is really like, otherwise we will have missed the bus, brother. And it's been too many lives, too much energy that has gone into trying to get these people to just treat us fairly. That's all we ever ask for. See, when you really break it down.
Right.
Just be
that's
fair.
All we ever ask for, but of course it's not going to happen because it's not in them.
That's
every time,
right.
Every time some things they say, well, that's not who we are. Oh, hell yeah, that's who you are. You have a man coming into office on the commemoration date of Dr. King, who's the most racist, bigoted, this man here is, and his cabinet is not reflective of this country, but yeah, it is in their mind of white people,
it's
white men.
It's an all-star team of white dominance.
Yes. Yes, Brother Bomani. Yes, it is.
Yes, sir. And our power, I mind that our real power is in separation. Mm-hmm. If we don't pursue that as a objective, we might as well just dye our hair blonde and our lips tucked in and learn to speak proper English at the appropriate time.
The nature
time.
Of black people have always been the fight. You know, we're the people throughout the history, and that's why we educate our children with history, to show the history of us being a people under certain struggles and fighting continuously. Whether it's the transatlantic European slave trade, or just being here on these plantations and burning down the plantations and fighting off the people that are suppressing us and fighting for our freedom. So we as a people have to understand that it's a continuous fight, and you work to the next level and the next level. And the next level for us as a people is to realize that we can't compete and commit our life to these people's system, no matter who's in power. So we see a new government, but then we look at the previous government and the previous government and the previous government.
All
and
the
we
same.
Look at what have we gotten out of it? So we have to realize that, hey, what are we going to do to get what we need to get to do what we need to do? But at the same time, too, we have to open up our minds to the struggles and the future of Africa and figuring it out, because we talked about the Lebanese. They have built a stronghold. and they're peaceful, quiet, and they have a generation they're going, generations, I should say, and they have their own country, Lebanon, but their own country is bordered by a bunch of chaos, which they may not all be able to figure out because they have so many different groups that's involved in their country and want different things for their country. But they've realized that, hey, we may need to build a future in Africa. That's the Lebanese saying that. So I'm also saying to people that if the Lebanese can look at that as their future and their option, and this is our mother, this is our mother country, mother continent, where we were taken away from and didn't agree that we were going to give up on our citizenship. We never agreed that we didn't want to be citizens in Africa. We were just taken away. And the fact of it that us, the people, coming back and we want to put money where our mouth is and say, hey, we want to come back to the African continent. We weren't taken. So now what you want to do? So we have to be the leader of that movement because Africa is being distracted by so many different entities. And the good thing about Africa and our African continent is that we see the last major power of the African continent being pushed out. Every time you turn around, you hear several different African nations that was controlled by the French saying, we're done, we don't want your military protecting us, you're not protecting us, because now we have Boko Haram and we have other terrorist group literally just right there in Central Africa or West Africa or just the area where the majority of French slash
British
colonies are taken over and dominated. So,
well, the thing
that's
is this.
That's another open situation. Go ahead.
Yeah. Well, the thing is this. You know, the French. I remember they said the French would be a shithole country if it were not for the colonization of Africa that still is maintained today. All the resources, and then when colonization was ending in Africa in the 60s, and some of the French had to get out, they destroyed the infrastructure that they created, because the infrastructure that they created, the railroads and so forth, was strictly not for the benefit of the people, but strictly for the benefit of extracting the resources and getting them from where they were out into to the ports so they could be shipped to France and shipped to England and shipped wherever. The bottom line is, to me, no longer should we even tolerate, even suggest that these countries will still do what they're doing. Unfortunately, I just seen where Nigeria cut a deal with France to provide oil and a pipeline to be run from Nigeria and through other countries in the north to so France can access it, you know? And there's been such total disrespect by these European countries, by Caucasians, and disrespect by Indians, disrespect by Arabs, disrespect by Asians. And I'm saying this shit's got to end. When are we going to step up? But we only step up when we step up collectively. It can't be just, the Ghanaians, they're going to step up, or the brothers in Burkina Faso and in Mali and in Chad, or, Niger, they're going to... No.
Yeah, so that's what I'm saying. So what is the purpose of an African Union, and what is the purpose of the different regional states like ECOWAS, the East African Community, and so on?
And they're weak. ECOWAS is weak. And the African Union is weak. The African Union... Let me tell you what pissed me off with the African Union. They decided that May 25th, which is African Liberation Day.
African Liberation Day, my favorite holiday.
Yes.
African Liberation Day, May 25th, every year on every single African country.
Yes. And what did they decide to call it? Africa Day. You know, damn
Africa Day.
Because why?
So how do you take the liberation out of African Liberation Day? Because that's the purpose of making it the African Liberation Day. Because it was all about liberation. Every single country was fighting for liberation.
Yes.
And that's why all the countries agree that they'll have one single day to represent the African Liberation Day movement, which is May 25th. So that's something that you don't ever change.
That's right. I got
because that sparked a movement from 1950 to the 80s to where almost every single country in African continent was liberated.
I got another call. Let me get this last call.
That is a big move.
Right on.
That should never be changed.
We got one more caller in before we close out, Brother Kevin.
Absolutely.
How you doing?
Hey, how you all doing?
I'm doing. You're on the line with Brother Bomani Tahimba of Africa for the Africans. And they've been taking over 700 of our people to the African continent. Then you can check him out at AfricaForTheAfricans.org. Go ahead, brother Kevin.
Yeah, kind of address the last brother's his comments, and this is just my comment. We're that way because when we were segregated, we began to move towards independence in a lot of communities, and Tulsa, which I'm in Tulsa to right now, it was destroyed, and then we were given. Open the communities were opened up, and our minds have always been geared towards white ice was colder and its sugar was sweeter. Mm. So you can see it today. If you want to have a successful marriage, you can't marry a black person. You can't have two black people marry one another. Hmm. You have to have one marry someone else, but very seldom. And I mean, we really need to begin to address that. Nationally bombard these stations with the insult of telling us that we cannot be successful unless we marry and we communicate with someone outside of our group. But anyway, I don't want to go on because I know I'm right at the end of your show. But, we're being bombarded. But I say the solution for that is that we need more outlets like what you're doing so that we have an alternative and so people can see it from another perspective and it will instill within them a sense of hope and a sense of purpose.
Ashe.
So that's what all
about. Right. Thanks. Yeah. Thanks. That's right. This is African Perspectives. Good afternoon.
Hey, what's happening, OC man? I just wanted to say, how you doing today, brother?
I'm doing well.
We're doing well, brother. Doing well. Good to hear from you.
Good, good, good. Hang in there and continued success.
All right, my brother. That's it. But Bomani, he's been very successful. Over almost 800 of our people have gone on tours with him since 2006, And so he's been taking at least about 6-7 tours a year. He's got 5 scheduled. In fact, I'm going to go over those right here, Jay, so you just continue to listen because we're out of here.
Yeah, definitely share the schedule.
Yes. So let me pull that up right quick, Brother Bomani, so people can know what you're doing. Okay. Yeah.
And all those schedules that you're going to read, they can literally just view the full details on our website, AfricaForTheAfricans.org. And once they get on that website, they'll see the full tours for 2025, and then they'll see some of them for 2026. And once you click on it, you have a full tour overview with all the numbers, what's included, what's not included, the price, the ticket details, all of the places that we're going to, and the actual hotel that we're staying at.
So the journey,
so they'll see those things for all the tours. They'll see the full itinerary, visa information if there's needed, our preparation, departure details, and just any other details that we just get them ready as far as preparation information.
So on the website, AfricaForTheAfricans.org, that information is there. In terms of the trip of a lifetime, he's going January 30th, this month, January 30th to February 10th, 2025, Azania, South Africa. April 4th to April 14th, Kenya. May 24th to June 5th, Ghana. November 20th to December 1st, Tanzania. February 12th to the 23rd of February, Liberia. April 1st to April 13th, Kemet, what the Greeks called Egypt. So these trips are already planned. All you got to do is put your money down, contact Brother Bomani. You can see, if you want to see pictures of previous tours, go to facebook.com/Bomani. If you want to see videos, and I'm talking about updated, this is not something, this is updated. If you want to see videos, go to youtube.com Facebook.com/Bomani2007. Even on the flyer, they have the people who went on the tour to Kemet, the people who went on the tour to Ghana back in July, the people who went on the tour in Kemet was November, the people who went to Liberia last year in April, and the people who went to Azania back in December of 23. So he always updates. Brother Bomani, you got the last word.
Yes, family, for those who are interested in traveling and connecting with us through Africa, you can reach out to me directly at 404-931-9429, and you can check our website out for full details at africafortheafricans.org, or you can look me up at search at Bomani Tayemba to see all the things that we have this online, and I'll be on standby.
All right, brother. Thank you so much, Brother Bomani. I've been promoting him on this program, on this platform. I don't do it every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday like I used to, but I'll always push and promote AfricaForTheAfricans.org, tours and investment. You'll definitely know what's happening. You definitely know where he's going to go, and maybe that will interest you and that you will want to contact him and start to get the ball rolling with your down payment, your payments per month, and whatever. Until it happens for you, it's all right there for you. Brothers and sisters, we end this program like we end all of our programs with the words of Stephen Biko. The most potent weapon in the hands of the oppressor is the minds of the oppressed. This program is dedicated and committed to helping to free the African mind. But not just the M-I-N-D, but the M-I-N-E, because under the feet of African people lies all of the resources that everybody wants, think they can't do it out, and they sure in hell don't want to pay for it. Brothers and sisters, you have a blessed and wonderful day. Shem Hotep means go in peace. Asante Sana means thank you. Bibi Fahordie means our victorious destiny. Brothers and sisters, we will be victorious. You have a blessed and wonderful day. See you on Friday.